Chapter 3, Cultivating Agency, Choosing Action Over Intent. Inaction breeds doubt and fear. Action breeds confidence and courage. If you want to conquer the negative elements in your life, don't sit at home and think about it. Get out and get busy. Dale Carnegie. Principle. To develop the brave habit, you must cultivate a sense of agency to accomplish your goals and vision. As discussed in the last chapter, brave action is more likely to occur when A, you believe in a better possible future, and B, you believe that you have the ability to bring it about. In this chapter, we're going to discuss how to develop a sense of personal agency or confidence in your ability to influence the world around you. In his 1989 book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen R. Covey introduced the concept that he called the circles of concern and influence. Your circle of concern is an expansive circle that contains everything in the world that occupies your attention, causes you to worry, or could affect you in some way. As Covey wrote, "In the circle of concern are the wide range of concerns we have, such as our health, our children, problems at work, the national debt, nuclear war. There are some things over which we have no real control. We are deeply concerned about them, but we can only have a limited influence, if any, over them." Your circle of influence is a much smaller circle that represents the area within which you can take agency and influence the world around you. In the circle of influence are those things we can do something about, Covey wrote. This includes our behaviors, our attitudes, and our efforts. We can work on our habits, work on being a more patient parent, or learn new skills to be more effective at work. In our circle of influence, we can directly affect change. As you increase your sense of personal agency, your circle of influence grows, as does your ability to shape the concerns that affect you. You begin to see the direct effect of brave action, which reinforces your sense of agency, and the entire cycle perpetuates. However, as your sense of personal agency diminishes, your belief that brave action is possible can also shrink. This means that you become more cautious, seeing yourself as the victim of your circumstances rather than their shaper. In his book, Nerve, Poise Under Pressure, Serenity Under Stress, Taylor Clark cites post-World War II research into combat stress among combatants. He wrote, "According to the 1945 report, Men Under Stress, the mortality rate for dogfighters was among the highest in the military. The pilots knew that half of them would be killed in action. Yet, fighter pilots also enjoyed wildly high job satisfaction, with 93% of them claiming to be happy with their assignments. And why should they be so content? Because fighter pilots felt they were in complete control of their fate. They could maneuver however they liked through a huge airspace, and they believed, to a man, that their piloting skill would determine their survival, not luck." This sense of satisfaction with their role can be summed up in one word: agency. While every single participant in the war understood the overall mission, some felt much more at the mercy of the military brass who were plotting their next move. For fighter pilots, there was a sense that their future was in their own hands, that they were the agents of their own fate, even though their role was among the most dangerous in the military. In order to develop the brave habit, you must believe that you have your hand on the controls. To do this, develop a sense of perceived agency, meaning a belief that you have the ability to influence or bring about your vision. The opposite of perceived agency is perceived powerlessness. This means that while you may have clarity about a better possible future, you feel helpless to do anything to influence it. Thus, you are largely resigned to your fate. Albert Bandura was one of the most influential psychologists of the past century. His work included decades of research into a concept that he called self-efficacy, or the self-perception of capability to influence the world around us. He wrote, "Perceived self-efficacy refers to beliefs in one's capabilities to organize and execute the courses of action required to produce given attainments." The effects of perceived self-efficacy are significant, especially in the face of uncertainty or danger. Bandura continued, "People's beliefs in their efficacy have diverse effects. Such beliefs influence the courses of action people choose to pursue, how much effort they put forth in given endeavors, how long they will persevere in the face of obstacles and failures, their resilience to adversity, whether their thought patterns are self-hindering or self-aiding, how much stress and depression they experience in coping with taxing environmental demands, and the level of accomplishments they realize. According to Bandura, regardless of their desire, perceived self-efficacy is a critical factor in whether people act upon their goals, ambitions, and perceived opportunities. When there is low perceived self-efficacy, the individual is far less likely to extend themselves in the face of potential consequences. He concluded, "Beliefs of personal efficacy constitute the key factor of human agency. If people believe they have no power to produce results, they will not attempt to make things happen." While Bandura's research highlights that a sense of agency is critical in the moment when brave action is required, that perceived agency is not theoretical or collective. It's highly individual. Each person must believe in their ability to bring about their desired change. There are three primary categories of agency that you can develop in order to increase the likelihood of brave action. Proficiency, which is your skills and mindset. People, which is your relationships and your ability to call on your network to get things done. And platform, the influence that you are able to leverage to achieve your goal. Proficiency. As you survey your current responsibilities, goals, and ambitions, what skills do you depend on to help you complete them? Do you have all the skills you need, or are there outages? What skills do you need to develop in order to help you meet the challenges that lay ahead of you? Your perception of your mastery of core skills is critical. The more practice you have, the more confidence you will develop in moments of uncertainty. For example, for many people, the idea of playing an improvisational guitar solo is a mind-bending exercise in creativity. However, most accomplished guitarists have spent so many hours practicing the core techniques of their trade, playing scales forward and backward at varying speeds, and emulating other great players, that when the time comes to perform a guitar solo, they are able to draw from a deep library of possibilities, quickly evaluate them, and perform them seamlessly. They have developed core competence by practicing basic patterns over and over, which gives them confidence to take a chance on improvisational riffs. The key with regard to mastery isn't that you perceive that you could do something with ease. Rather, it's that you believe that you have the ability to accomplish it, even if it is challenging. Phil Libin has founded multiple companies, including the very successful note-taking platform Evernote. In an interview, he told me that the most valuable ideas to pursue are those that A, have just become possible for the first time in human history, and B, are still really difficult to accomplish. This means that while technically possible, very few people will pursue those ideas because of the difficulty involved. The willingness to look at such opportunities and say, "It would be very difficult, but I could do that if I chose to," is what we mean by a sense of agency. Many people simply rely on their past successes to help them meet their present challenges, but eventually you will be outmatched. In order to position yourself for continual brave action, commit to continuous skill development. Here are a few questions to help you identify skills that you may want to consider adding to your development plan. Where do you feel the most insecure or out of your league in your daily life? Is it due to a skill that you lack or some kind of knowledge that you haven't attained? Have you ever hit a wall because you lacked the skill to take a project to the next level? What happened and what would have allowed you to go farther? As you consider people you admire, what do they seem to have in abundance that you lack? How might you be able to develop it? There's no magic formula to developing proficiency. It's simply a matter of committing to a plan, doing the hard work of developing that skill every day, and measuring your progress. Here's an action step for you. Choose one skill that you are going to develop over the next 3 months. Then choose a method for learning it. It could be a course, a workbook, a mentor, etc. And plot a plan of action. Measure your progress so that you know how you're doing along the way. People. None of us work in a vacuum. We depend on others in order to achieve our goals, which means that our network is an essential element of our sense of agency. And the deeper and more diverse our network, the more leverage we have over uncertainty because we're able to draw upon the expertise of others in our moment of need. Do you intentionally seek and cultivate relationships with others in your life and work, or do you simply take relationships as they come? The people you surround yourself with are your deepest source of courage and are also likely to be the ones to provide perspective on when you should act and when you should wait. Seek to surround yourself with quality people of character. Do the people you spend time with encourage you to grow, or do they reinforce bad habits? Do you have people you can call upon for wisdom in a moment of uncertainty, or are you always the smartest person in the room? Do you regularly reach out to encourage others in your network, or are you solely on the receiving end of others' encouragement? Here's an action step for you. Attend one networking event or work to cultivate a new relationship every quarter that helps you take action toward your vision of a better future. Platform. It doesn't matter how brilliant your idea is if you have no platform from which to introduce it into the world. In fact, mediocre ideas introduced through an expansive platform will often outperform brilliant ideas introduced through a mediocre platform. So, in order to increase your sense of agency, consider your platform. While many people have great ideas, far fewer have the resources and opportunity to bring those ideas into the world. Fewer still are willing to leverage that platform and all it could cost to act in order to see that change enacted. In his book, Profiles in Courage, former United States President and then United States Senator John F. Kennedy shared the stories of several politicians who expended significant political capital in order to support a cause they believed in, but that others in their political party stood opposed to. While many average citizens may have felt similarly about the issues at hand, only someone with the platform for action, such as a sitting U.S. senator, could meaningfully act to bring about that change. In a similar manner, someone with greater authority within an organization has more capacity to act on opportunities than someone with a smaller platform. In examining your platform for action, consider the, quote, capital that you have to spend in order to see the results you want. Where have you earned trust that gives you the right to speak your ideas? What audience has given you permission to share with them? Which relationships have you developed that will happily circle around you as you pursue your vision? What resources have you garnered that can be spent on behalf of your cause? The challenge is this: as your platform grows, so does the perceived cost of action. The stakes often feel much higher once you have something to protect. Your platform is any area in which you have amplification, meaning your leadership role, your trusted relationship with a leader in your organization, your influence with your peers, or your standing in your community. The key is to grow your platform in a way that's consistent with your goals. While leading a neighborhood development project gives you a platform within your community, it will probably matter little at work. Make sure that you are developing your platform in ways that align with your vision of a better future. In what areas do you have outsized influence compared to your peers? How does that, or might that, platform give you agency to pursue your goals and vision? Where do you have more credibility than others, and how might you leverage it in order to pursue your vision of a better possible future? Here's an action step. Determine which elements of your platform can be developed to give you better ability to pursue your vision. By committing to continual growth and development of each of the three P's, you increase your likelihood of brave action in moments of uncertainty. Then you must commit to turning your sense of agency into action. From agency to action. I've despised running for most of my life. After playing multiple sports in high school, all of which required a lot of running and conditioning, I swore off running as exercise for decades. Instead, I preferred to play sports like basketball, where at least my running had a purpose other than self-torture. When I was in my mid-40s, I tore my ACL while playing in a pickup basketball game, and my exercise options were suddenly very limited. After my recovery, I decided to give running one more try. On my first run, I made it close to half a mile before I was bent over gasping for air. I turned around and walked home. The next time, I ran closer to a mile, very slowly. It felt like a huge accomplishment, even though you could have timed my pace with a calendar. This went on for months as I developed my capacity for distance and speed. One day, as I was turning a corner and hitting mile 3, something odd happened. I realized I was actually enjoying my run. I was lost in the moment, listening to a podcast, and was no longer fixated on how tortured I felt. Instead, running was just something I did. It had become a habit. Now, any day when I don't run feels strange. It feels like something is missing. The very thing I'd most despised for years has become an indispensable part of my routine. The same principle holds true for bravery. We develop the capacity for acting bravely through the daily practice of making small, brave decisions. Every time we pause and act deliberately with bravery, we increase our capacity to act bravely in the future. We make bravery a part of our identity and essential to how we see ourselves in the world. Small, daily, decisive, brave actions transform your perspective of bravery from an enormous act of the will to a natural outcome of your identity. You begin to see yourself as someone who does brave things. Bravery is proven through your actions, not your intentions. However, acting doesn't always mean doing. Sometimes acting can mean not doing or releasing something that you believe you are entitled to, even though it hurts to do so. Three modes of bravery. Just do it now. Don't think, just take the plunge. Act fast, otherwise you'll talk yourself out of it. While well-intentioned, this advice is often brash and unwise. Bravery isn't just about what you do, it can sometimes be about what you choose not to do. As you develop the habit of bravery, you may choose to defer action because deferring is, in fact, the bravest choice in the moment. There are three forms that brave choices might take. Bravery to act. This is bravery in its most obvious form. We think of people running into burning buildings, taking leaps of faith, or exposing corruption in a very public way. Those moments certainly require bravery, no question about it. However, so do everyday decisions in which you must choose to do the right thing, even at potential personal cost. What are the qualities of brave action? Brave people are protective. Cowards exploit. If your actions are to protect someone or something vulnerable, whether a person or an ideal, then there's a chance it's the right action. Bravery, by its very nature, is protective of what it cares about and is compelled to protect and defend it. Bravery stands in the gap for the vulnerable. Brave people reveal the truth at the right time. Cowards conceal it. Brave people know that the truth is never really a threat. But even if it costs them their livelihood or relationship, the cost of inaction is simply too vast to take the easy way out. Bravery seeks truth even when it's inconvenient. Brave people consider context and scale. Cowards think about right now. The brave choice is the one that takes into account nuance and context, is empathetic, and scales in a positive way. Cowardly action is only concerned with immediate consequences. Those who act bravely consider the larger context of their actions, not just their immediate results. Bravery seeks long-term viability, not instant gratification. Brave people are principle-driven. Cowards go with their gut. Brave people have a framework for making decisions that is so ingrained that their actions in the face of adversity are almost automatic. Cowards, on the other hand, simply react in the moment in order to protect themselves and their interests. Bravery is bounded by a belief in a greater principle. Brave people face consequences. Cowards blame others. Brave people are willing to be known by their choices and are willing to face the consequences of their actions, whether good or bad. Brave people do not play the victim. Bravery takes accountability for its actions and beliefs. Cowards are never to blame. Seek a scapegoat for every instance of failure and throw people, even their allies, under the bus. Brave people initiate. Cowards just allow life to happen to them. Those who choose bravery know that it often means being the first mover when others are scared to do so. It means initiating reconciliation in a relationship, being the first to start a venture, being the first into the water. Bravery makes things happen rather than just letting things happen. Cowards just take things as they come, backward rationalizing why what happened was exactly what they wanted anyway. Brave people listen. Cowards want to be heard. Brave people are not threatened by differing opinions. Brave leaders know that brilliance is forged in the cauldron of creative conflict. Bravery isn't threatened by disagreement. Cowards are more concerned with being seen as the driving force behind every idea than with the idea actually being effective and providing value. Brave people follow through, cowards hedge. Those who choose brave action know that it means seeing things through to the end, even when it gets uncomfortable. Cowards might be eager to jump in, but abandon their effort when it costs them something. Bravery persists in the face of hardship. The financial crisis of 2008-2009 caught many people unaware, especially those who worked in the real estate industry. Scott was definitely in a bind. As a commercial real estate agent, he suddenly found his industry spiraling, and it was looking increasingly likely that he would be left without an income at the worst possible time while expecting the birth of twins. With a family to support, his work was vanishing, and Scott began to consider his options. He was offered a job selling office furniture, and while that path would provide a paycheck and a bit of stability to help his family through the difficult time, he also knew that he simply wasn't suited for the work. The other option that Scott began mulling over was to make the leap from commercial to residential real estate, leveraging his network to jumpstart his business. Even with his experience in commercial real estate, it was a big risk, especially with the market reeling as it was. "I knew I had the skills to be able to make it work," Scott told me, "but it was still a big unknown given what was happening with the economy." So much was out of his control. In reviewing his options with his wife, Kristen, Scott was leaning heavily toward taking the job selling office furniture. It was steady work, and it would give him some time to consider his next move. However, Kristen wasn't convinced. She told Scott that he simply wasn't wired for the repetitive nature of the sales job. She knew he would be miserable, and that either way, the office furniture job would be a temporary fix. Together, they developed a plan for Scott to launch his residential real estate practice, but wisely set some rails and milestones for the venture. They cashed in their investments and savings, which gave them about 6 months of runway before they would need to find another way to generate income. They decided that if there wasn't significant momentum at the six-month mark, they would reconsider and Scott would take a salaried job. For the first few months, things were slow. But just in the nick of time, Scott was able to get his first home under contract, generating a bit of income to extend their runway and show that the business might actually work. Over the coming months, Scott began to generate more and more income, and in spite of the economic conditions still not being ideal, he was able to build a sustainable residential real estate practice. Over a dozen years later, Euler Hines is thriving in the top 10 of all Coldwell Banker teams in the United States. It's certainly not been a smooth ride, but Scott told me that when he was in the midst of his most challenging moments, trying to make a decision about what to do next, he kept returning to a quote from Dr. Rita Levi Montalcini. "Above all, don't fear difficult moments. The best comes from them." Of course, we'd love to celebrate stories of bravery like Scott's that work out in the end. But for a moment, pretend that Scott and Kristen had failed. Did they still make the right decision? I believe they did, because it's possible to make a good, brave decision that has a bad outcome. You cannot evaluate past decisions based upon your present understanding. Regret is often the result of applying new learnings to past situations. As you grow, you become wiser, more experienced, and more mature in your ability to recognize patterns. So, it's natural to have a twinge of regret when you consider the past. It may even cause you to double think your present decisions, not because you're trying to do what's right, but because you're trying to avoid doing what's wrong. I call this dynamic retroanalysis paralysis, either an inability to move due to fear of getting it wrong, or a knee-jerk reaction to bad outcomes in the past can prevent you from choosing bravely in the present moment. It robs you of your sense of agency. The qualities of brave action in this section are filters through which you can sift your own decisions. Am I initiating or deferring? Am I listening or do I just want to be heard? Am I operating out of principle or just going with my gut? Brave action is the most obvious manifestation of bravery, but it can also take two additional forms. bravery to let go. When I was 5 years old, I had an inescapable crush on a girl in my grade. I wanted so desperately for her to notice me, but all of the other boys were constantly showering her with attention, and I simply couldn't compete. One day, at recess, an inspired plan came to me in a flash. I would climb to the top of the tallest set of monkey bars, then, in front of everyone, I would swing upside down, back and forth, by my legs, and shout her name. I mean, come on, what girl could possibly resist such an act of skill and charm? It was only a few minutes before recess ended, so I had to move quickly. I climbed the bars, made my way out to the middle, secured my legs, and let my body fall backward while simultaneously yelling, "Hey, Jenny, look at me!" Unfortunately, in my feverish determination to get Jenny's attention, I'd not heard the recess bell. Everyone on the playground was lined up in complete silence a short distance away, already prepared to go back inside, and I was swinging upside down in front of them, proclaiming my love to the world. First, the giggles started, then the laughs, finally the mimicking shouts of, "Hey, Jenny!" Worse, while I had a good plan to get up onto the monkey bars, I had no plan for getting back down. I managed to maneuver so I was hanging by my hands, but I couldn't generate enough momentum to swing to the next bar. I was stuck until my teacher lifted me by the waist and placed me on the ground. It took weeks for the snickering to end, and Jenny never reciprocated my affection. But the worst part of it was that I'd put myself in a situation that I simply couldn't get out of. That early experience affected me in such a way that it was years before I could show my interest in another girl. I was stuck in that moment of embarrassment. Obviously, I eventually moved on and most of my friends completely forgot about the incident, but it still stings a little, just a little, to this day. Oddly, the context of my shame was closely related to a principle that I later come to learn is critical both to human development and developing the habit of bravery. Brachiation. Brachiation is a term used both in zoology and in childhood development to describe the ability to swing from one hold to another. For example, think of a child who is playing on a set of monkey bars. The child must master the ability to let go of one bar while simultaneously grabbing a hold of another. Fear of falling is often the root cause of the inability to brachiate. After all, if the next grip isn't secure, the trip to the ground will be rapid and unforgiving. Ironically, if the child is unable or unwilling to let go, momentum will be stalled and the child will get stuck in the middle. This inevitably means falling anyway or screaming for someone to come and rescue them. While most adults have mastered physical brachiation, psychological brachiation can be much more difficult to embrace. Much like the fearful child on the monkey bars, when we lack the ability to let go of the way things have been and move on to something new, we get stuck. We stall our momentum. While we may not be in physical harm, we spend months or years spinning our wheels, hopelessly stuck in place, unable to move forward. In our desire to maintain stability by being rooted in the present or the past, we undermine our future potential. Imagine standing with one foot securely on shore and one foot in a boat. For a while, you can have both the safety of the shore and the freedom of the boat. However, once the boat begins to separate from the shore, you must make a decision. Either stay on the shore where it's safe, predictable, and secure, or jump in the boat and embrace the adventure and potential risk. If you try to remain half and half, you'll end up in the water. Often, the reason we fail to let go of the present or past is because we're simply too comfortable. We may not like our present circumstances, but at least they're familiar to us. They pose no immediate threat. Our understanding of our identity is wrapped up in what we have accomplished, how others perceive us, and our perceived or desired role in the world. We would rather live with perceived invulnerability than to test our limits and discover we actually have some. Sometimes the act of bravery that's required of us is bravery to let go. We must be willing to appreciate and value what has already been while simultaneously embracing what might be, giving that our full attention and effort. Sometimes we must let go even before we've fully secured our grip on the next bar. This can be difficult, especially if you've been deeply in pursuit of a goal or a dream that didn't work out the way you'd hoped. Much of your sense of identity can become wrapped up in pursuing a thing, and when it doesn't work out, the emotional labor necessary to separate yourself from that dream can be overbearing. This is why so many people still live in the past, retelling old stories, revisiting the glory days. They haven't fully let go of what used to be and embraced what now is. They are still sorting out their identity apart from their past accomplishments or relationships. However, if you are unwilling to let go of the past, you will inevitably get stuck in the present and will be unable to meet the needs of the future. Optimizing around what's most comfortable is a guaranteed way to find yourself incapable of meeting the demands of tomorrow. Training yourself to experience small amounts of discomfort daily will prepare you for the moments when you're asked to do something that feels like a risk. Many organizations experience a similar dynamic when they go through times of change or restructuring. While the new systems might be more efficient and better for the long term, in the near term, there are always team members who prefer to hang on to existing ways of doing things because those processes are more comfortable and familiar in the moment. There is a kind of letting go that has to happen for the team to move forward, but many are reluctant to do so. A part of the leader's responsibility is to paint a picture of a better possible future and to help the team understand that the new processes are the method to achieve that vision. In other words, to cultivate an environment in which the team can be brave enough to let go of the way things were and embrace the way things could be. I have the opportunity to talk with many very accomplished people, such as business leaders, artists, and writers. Most outside observers think that there is probably a singular moment when they felt like they'd made it or when success finally arrived. However, when I ask these very successful people about that moment, I often hear things like, well, there wasn't really one moment, there was a string of them, or it just happened over time, or it snuck up on me. This has reinforced a belief that I've had for a long time that success doesn't come all at once, but instead it comes in layers. By the time you achieve that success you've long desired, it's likely to feel like the next logical step in a long series of steps you've already been taking to that point. The same is true of risk. While we often think that bravery is about taking giant leaps into the unknown, in reality, a brave decision often feels a bit commonplace to those who are making it because they've trained themselves over time to see risk as a natural part of what it means to do valuable work. As you survey your life, is there any place where you are simply in need of exercising bravery to let go and move on? Are you holding onto the bar for too long, in danger of falling because you're unwilling to act bravely? Bravery to wait. There's a more subtle form of brave action that in some ways looks like inaction. Bravery to wait. Sometimes the most brave decision you can make is to stand firm against the tide, even when everything around you and everyone around you is trending in the other direction. You may feel like you're missing out on a golden opportunity, or others may tell you that you're foolish to pause, but you know deep down that it's not the right time. Your particular act of bravery is to stand against popular opinion or critique. In fact, there will be times in your life and leadership when it seems like you are the only person who doesn't think something is a good idea. Now, it's always possible that you're missing some key piece of information that could prove you wrong. However, it's also possible that the timing just isn't right yet. In these moments, the bravest thing you can do is stand with your feet firmly planted, even as the tide is rushing against you and everyone around you is telling you that you are foolish. Note that this is not an excuse for cowardly inaction. I'm not telling you that you should sit on the sidelines because you don't want the discomfort of being in the midst of the action. Rather, it's an acknowledgement that action in and of itself is not necessarily brave. Sometimes it's merely bold. We often celebrate stories of successful entrepreneurs who cast caution to the wind and brashly launched a business before they should have. However, we often suffer from survivorship bias, a term used to describe a cognitive trap in which we generalize the traits or outcomes of a small group to the general population. So because the stories of successful risk takers are celebrated, we generally think that success means taking wild leaps of faith. Of course, you've heard of these phenomenally successful entrepreneurs. Their stories grace the cover of every magazine. What you often don't hear are the unfortunate souls who also leaped before they should have and failed miserably, either due to poor timing, poor resources, or a general lack of skill or platform to bolster success. Maybe they were so afraid of missing out on an opportunity that they couldn't muster the courage to wait until they were ready to seize it. Maybe they acted not out of true bravery, but out of a kind of cowardice that fears being mocked for missing the moment. This is why patience is often its own form of bravery. Patience requires you to quiet the deeper impulse to leap blindly in favor of a more strategic course of action. This isn't an excuse not to act, but is instead permission to act in strategic ways while you ready yourself for the bigger risk. One of the ways you prepare yourself is by growing your network of truth tellers. I was once speaking at a large event for the U.S. Air Force, and a retired four-star general was among the other speakers. As I was in the green room eating a blueberry muffin, he quietly approached me from behind, and when I turned around, I was face-to-face with this legendary military leader. He asked my advice about creativity, and I asked him what he considered to be the most important thing that leaders should know. Without hesitating, he replied, "You need people around you to speak truth to you before you realize you need people around you to speak truth to you. By the time you realize you need them, it's already too late." If you only seek people to tell you what you want to hear, you'll definitely attract them. You can always find someone to encourage you to take a foolish leap into the unknown. They probably don't really care about you, they just want to see what happens. Don't fall prey to the myth that bravery means rash action. The reality is often the opposite. The person standing silently, observantly on the sidelines, while often mistaken for a coward, might be surveying the game and waiting for the perfect moment to pounce. Is there any place in your life or work where you feel compelled to take a wild leap into the unknown and may even feel fear of missing out if you don't? Would that leap be true bravery or mere boldness and bravado? We enact our sense of agency by making brave choices in the moment of uncertainty. Whether it's through acting, letting go, or waiting, bravery is proven through what we do, not through what we intend. However, agency alone is not enough to inspire brave action. In the next chapter, we'll dive deeper into how to cultivate an optimistic vision of the future. Checkpoint. It's important to remember that bravery isn't just about bold action. For this season of your life, consider the following questions. What brave action have you been deferring because you don't believe you have the agency to act? How might you commit to developing the skills, platform, or relationships that you need to act? Is there anything you simply need to let go of right now? What is it, and what does letting go look like? Is there any place in your life where bravery right now means waiting? What does this mean for you, and what potential negative feedback could that elicit from those around you?